Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Jesse's been cooking some amazing veggie lasagna.
Yeah.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah, I love cooking. My mom taught me when I was very young. And also, you know, I love my mom to death, but she wasn't the greatest cook. So when I learned how to cook. Yeah. So when I learned how to cook, I sort of took over, and my Friday nights were like pizza night. And I started when I was about 8 or 9 years old to cook for my family. And I kind of fell in love with it. There's something very soothing and sort of zen-like to getting in the kitchen and preparing food for people you love and then watching them enjoy it. It's kind of similar to being a musician. Like, you know, you prepare the song, you play the song live, the performance. Kind of linked the two.
I can't relate to any of those things, playing good music or cooking good food. But Andy, you're a good cook.
Yeah, I love cooking. I'm pretty similar to you, to be honest there, Jesse. Another thing we've got in common, because we found out on your podcast, like, we've got loads in common, weirdly enough, music taste and stuff.
All right, Andy, we won't have sex with you. Chill out.
Damn.
Well, I wore this for you. I wore this t-shirt for you, bro.
Tribe Called Quest. I love it. Nice.
Yeah.
So the same, like, my mum wasn't and still isn't the best cook. She doesn't listen to this podcast, so I can say that. My grandma kind of taught me to cook. And then from an early age, probably not as young as eight, I was probably about 12, 13. My mum was kind of like, there's the kitchen. You handle that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love cooking. And it is, there's like a, it's almost quite meditative. Is that the word sometimes?
Meditative, yeah.
Yeah. It's like
my mum tried her hardest to keep me away from the kitchen because there was fire. So there was fire and danger.
So do you eat out, or is your lady cook for you?
My wife's a really good cook. Yeah, Charlotte. She, her mum and dad, they owned a restaurant, like a bistro restaurant in Cleethorpes, where we live. They owned a restaurant for about 25 years, I think. And Charlotte, from the age of like 12, 13, was always working at the restaurant. So from a young age, she sort of learned how to cook. So yeah, she's a great cook. And to be fair, I mean, the older that I've got, I mean, Charlotte's taught me a lot, but yeah, I can put a meal together, but nothing sort of like, I'm not going to impress anybody. Certainly not with my food, but
we were just, before you joined us, Jesse, Tomo doesn't need to cook anymore because he's been literally, so I don't think you guys have it over in the States. Nando's.
This has gone too far.
I know Nando's because I've traveled a lot. I know Nando's very well. I've eaten there a ton. Yeah. It's a funny story about Nando's though. We were on tour with Iron Maiden over in England there playing, the arena, big fancy arena. You're talking Iron Maiden, one of the biggest metal bands in the world. And, I left the arena and walked down the street to eat at Nando's before the show.
Nice, oh my God, that's me all over. I literally, when I'm away working, like, my accountant says to me every year, like, do you not eat anywhere other than Nando's? Because literally all of your receipts are just Nando's or Wagamama's are the only two places that I really like eating.
That's
funny. Love it.
You know, Iron Maiden has catering and, like, you know, it's a full spread, and I just bailed and went to Nando's.
Oh man, I can imagine they've got a pretty big rider sort of thing as well. So
they had fresh juice. You kidding me? Like, you name it, they had it. The spread was amazing, better than I eat at home. Iron Maiden really t- took care of us. That's probably the best tour I've ever done in my life was with those
Well,
guys.
I guess when you're on tour, you've kind of got to keep your body in check to a certain degree, because I've got friends who have gone on tour and all they do is just drink and eat kebabs. And yeah. by the end of it, they're just ruined. So yeah. I guess when you're on tour as much as Iron Maiden and, you know, other huge stars, they have to look after their bodies, don't they?
No, you do. Absolutely. I'm at the point now where I've curbed my drinking. I barely drink on tour. And I only eat from 12 to 4 on tour. So noon to 4, that's
so
it.
So the fasting.
Yeah. And I keep it very light. Well, acid reflux is a big thing when you're sleeping on a bus. And, you know, I used to eat and party late at night and fall right asleep and wake up the next day and heartburn, bloated, feeling like total shit, hungover. There's only so many years you can do that before it takes its toll on you. I just got fucking tired of being sick and tired. So I decided to take care of myself. I'm in better shape now in my 40s than I was in my 20s.
Well, sure. Like you say, that's just because the lifestyle has an effect on your body eventually, doesn't it? The amount of people I know, again, that go on tour and the same, they don't drink at all on tour because you just can't keep up with it. You've just, especially if you've got to use your vocals and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
The stress that it must have on your vocals, again, because if you're drinking, then a lot of the time that includes smoking and also being in loud places where you're shouting and raising your voice, and it must have a strain on your voice eventually.
It does, and mine's very fragile with because I scream and yell and sing. It's not just one style. Yeah. But the smoking, I gave up smoking as well. Like, I used to love smoking weed. I don't really do that anymore either. I know I'm pretty lame on the road, but you know what? It's all about the show. The show must go on. Yeah. The show's going to be good. If you can't do your job, what good are you? You know,
exactly. That's it. And the fans are paying, you know, nowadays, especially, like, you know, it's a lot of money to go and see a show. So, you know, you want to be performing at your best. We were quite similar, really, weren't we, Tomo? Like, you know, We've said on the podcast quite a few times, like when we were younger, back in like the This Is England days, like we'd go out because in a sense it's like being on tour, although we're all sort of staying in. It's like I always call it like a summer camp kind of vibe. It's like the school holidays, because we're all kind of together in one place in one city, and you know, we finish work and then we're like, right, let's go out, let's drink, and that's great. But like the older we've got, the more you realize that it does affect your performance, you know. Yeah.
I can't physically do it now. I can't. If I'm working, like, say if I'm on a four-month shoot, I won't drink for 4 months unless I know that I've got, like, a week off, because I just, my body just doesn't allow me to do it anymore. I'm just like, it has such an effect on me for days when I'm drinking. So I just kind of, I don't know whether that's had a knock on my performances, because I was working a lot more when I was drinking. So maybe I just need to... Now I sort of care about my job. I work less. It's weird. I don't get it. Maybe I just need to not give a fuck anymore and I'll get more work. Maybe that's where I'm going wrong.
Yeah, I often wish I could give less fucks, but I care a lot about what I do and care a lot about everything now. It's like when I was young, it was anarchy, fuck everything. And now I've just, like, you know, I always worry about stuff. I plan ahead. I'm like super careful. Yeah, getting old's weird. I mean, look, it's either you get old or you die, and I'm glad to still be alive. So
that's it.
But then it's also important to enjoy your time whilst you're alive as well. It's trying to find that balance, isn't it?
There it
it's
is.
Trying to find that sort of happy medium of enjoying, you know, your time on the weekend with your friends, which 9 in 10 times, especially with British culture, it involves drinking. That's the thing.
Yeah, and same with my lifestyle and the boys in my band. So, you know, I'll take, like, if we got a day off, I'll go out and have a few and then cap it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And those guys will be up till 2 a.m. I'm in bed by 10:30, 11. But at least I've gone out and had a few and been with the boys, because you kind of have to do that. The camaraderie of the band.
Yeah, and that kind of that's so important as well, because you need that chemistry as a band as well, and that trust. And yeah, I guess you kind of need that. But I found the older that I've got, and I realize I'm sounding more and more Tory as this conversation goes on. But golf is amazing for that. Spending it sounds ridiculous.
He drives a Tesla. He plays golf. He doesn't drink as well. Like, what the fuck has this world done to you?
Honestly, people used to think I was cool, but not anymore.
Listen, honestly, man, it's all about what makes you happy. My drummer is a big golfer. He loves it too. He says it just gives him peace. And that's the thing too, man. You know, I go for long walks in the woods that's my way of finding peace, you know, and I get my exercise. And you got to find what makes you happy and do it. Like you said, balance, you know, work hard, but also give yourself time to enjoy and just do nothing. Like enjoy yourself.
Yeah. And that's the thing, isn't it? Like you're saying, you know, I think when you're younger, especially, like you kind of think that's what having fun is, going out, partying. And it is good fun while it, you know, while you can do it and kind of wake up.
And it's still
fun
as we get older as well.
But yeah, but like you say, like I, you know, I love on the weekend just, going out on walks with the wife or just doing like nice things like that. I know you're kind of similar, like look at your Instagram the other week, Jesse, you were sort of like on a bike ride with your lady and stuff. So it's like, that's the kind of, that's the good shit. Like that's fun, probably even more fun than going to the same.
Don't be so ridiculous. It's
night.
Not more fun. It is not more fun. That's a stupid thing to say. That is insane. You don't mean that. Look, well, you're a different, you know, person. On you're a different person on this podcast.
We've all changed.
Honestly. Oh, it's a ridiculous thing to say. I don't believe that for 1 minute.
I think what, you know, I think there's different types of fun for sure. But you know, like for us, like we have friends that we party with, and we'll do it like once every 2 months where we have like a chunk of days where either they'll come up here because we live up in the mountains near a stream. Like we're in a beautiful place and, you know, we'll sit around the fire. We'll chew on some mushrooms, smoke some weed, drink some beers, go tubing the next day. You have a couple of days of it and then you stop and you're off it for a while. So we still have fun. We still do it, but it's spaced out. It's special. And you're with people who feel the same way about it. Like you don't want to go too hard because the next day you don't want to be totally hungover. But if you are, guess what you do? You hair the dog, you drink again, and then you recover the next day.
Yeah, man. It's more special as well, I find, that when you sort of...
It is.
Like you say, you space it out, and then when you do it, you enjoy it that bit more because you've also got more to talk about as well. You've got more to catch up on. You need, and it's not like you're not just sort of picking at conversation for the sake of it. When you're in the pub every day with the same people, it's like you slowly sort of... Like, you get bored of that, whereas if you don't see someone for so long, it's like... You've got loads to talk about. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's completely accurate. I find when, you know, those days when I would go out drinking every night, your conversation devolves into dick jokes and talking shit about people and just crap.
Which,
you know,
is great. Which
is just fine too. Yeah,
a good dick joke.
Yeah.
Just going off what you were saying there, Jesse. Obviously, like you live in the mountains now and stuff like that. Which brings us on to your subject, which is a great one. And before we get into it, so. When you told us the subject, I messaged Tomo and I was like, oh, we had a guest on, a British actress in the first series called Georgia May Foote. And she had pretty much a similar subject. But I was like, that's fine because so hers was the same as yours, like city living, as opposed. But I think this is the difference. And this is what I want to like, you know, get into with you, like the cultural difference, because she was talking about like she's not a big fan of like living in London. She'd rather live in her industrial town in the north, which is, you know, there's a bit of a difference there, where you're talking like you know, New York to literally living in the mountains a little bit. Right. Do you know what I mean? Like we don't get that in the UK, which is like crazy. But like, yeah, like whereabouts are you, like literally in the mountains,
so
kind of thing?
Yeah. So if you look at a map and you go to Catskills Park, the Catskill Mountains in upstate New York. I live in a town called Woodstock, made famous by the music festival.
Yeah.
So, but the music festival took place an hour and 15 minutes away in a place called Bethel Woods. But where we live is still very much the culture is alive here. The people that live here, the way the town is run. If you go downtown, which is small, every Sunday there's a hippie drum circle. There's people walking around without shoes on. There's people who've done too much LSD and they don't know who they are anymore. Like it's still, it's there, but you know, it's progressed a lot. And you know, on this topic, I think I can go even deeper. You know, we can expand much more about, I would say, just lifestyles in general and why I think living in a city is limiting to your lifestyle and to your way of life, especially as you get older, which actually fits on topic with what we're talking about. Because when I lived in the city, it was constant. You have restaurants and bars, especially in New York City, open till 4 or 5 in the morning. So if I wanted to, I was just go, like party and, you know, you get drunk, you have fun, you pay for rounds, you come wake up the next morning, your bill is $500. Like you've just been out. that life, it got too much. And then the noise pollution, car horns, people yelling at each other, like all that shit, it's just not worth the price of admission. When you're young and you're in that mode, it's fucking amazing, right? It's great. You go out there and you can see your friends at any time. You can jump in a cab and go anywhere. Where up here where we live now, bars close at 10, you know?
Wow.
You can't, like, if you wanted to go out, you have to get creative with that shit. So, like, we have a big fire pit in our backyard. We invite people over. So if the bars close, come to our house. Going to sit under the stars, sit by a fireplace. The difference in conversation you'll have in our backyard versus being at the pub around a bunch of people in the city, vastly different. And it's awesome to see my friends that I used to live near in the city come up here and just completely change and relax and become more honest and open. And it's just a totally different vibe. And, you know, I meet these people and I talk to people on a regular basis who are like, oh, living in the city is fucking amazing. Best city in the world, New York City. Love it, love it, love it. And I don't get it anymore. I really don't. Once I made the move, I can tell you right now, I will never, ever move back to a city ever. I mean, maybe to sort of like a suburban-ish area, but there would have to be woods nearby. There would have to be a way for me to escape people. Because I find what's amazing about living up here is I can disconnect, especially with what I do, being a musician, being on stage, being surrounded by people like you guys. When you go to work, you're surrounded by people all the time. They want you to do this. You got to do that. You got to do this. I come home and I knock off and it's quiet. You can hear crickets and birds and the wind. That's it. Amazing. Nice.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like a utopia to me. I live for that shit. Like, I'd love to just, yeah. Because, I mean, I live in a sort of, we can discuss this on your, I live on like what's called a council estate over here. Mm-hmm. But it has got that kind of nice kind of green feel to it. There's a lot of open space and things like that, which is nice. But yeah, still that getting away, we've got like the Peak District isn't too far from where I am, which is like it's not a mountainous area, it's hills, you know.
Right.
But it's nice, it's green, and you can literally, yeah, you can walk for miles sometimes and like bump into like maybe one person, you know. But yeah, man, that just sounds fucking beautiful, man.
Yeah, I love that. I was talking to one of my friends today about living in cities, and I think, like you said before, Jesse, when you're younger, like that sort of thing, to have nightclubs and pubs and bars so accessible till whatever time, and there's always something happening. When you're younger, that's great, but then when you've got kids, it's like you couldn't think of anything worse. You just want to be able to sleep with my windows open at night and it just be silent, and you just don't hear a thing. Like, we live in a really quiet area, and yeah, I just buzz off that. But then it's also nice to sort of dip into the city life, like. I like going to London for a couple of days and then coming home and then it just being sort of silent. We live by the beach, so being able to go, and we only started appreciating it through lockdown, really. Just walking down the beach on the summer evenings is amazing. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, the beach is a whole other vibe that I love too. And I actually kind of miss that. I mean, I can get to the beach in about 3 hours from where we are, but... You know, I'm glad you brought up, you know, lockdown. And I think that was kind of part of my transitional time that, you know, I moved up here right before it happened. So I was already up here and established and had a home. But during that year and a half or so of being off the road and being isolated, being up here and being isolated is, I would say if I was alone, it would probably be a lot harder, but it was me and my lady. So we took full advantage of it. We were out every day on trails. Like, we would climb mountains. We would, you know, get these inflatable tubes, and we have a river near us. We would just float on the on the river all day. We had nothing to do. So we just submerged ourselves in the nature. And people that I knew that were in the city, obviously everything's closed. Most people in New York City have apartments that are fucking small. You know, you're paying like $3,000 for a closet. So these poor people were like stuck. And then, you know, up here, it's like a 3-bedroom home, big backyard, stream right there, accessible trails everywhere. So the pandemic truly made me appreciate this way of life. And it changes all of us. It changed all of us. I know in some way, shape, or form it did. But to me, if nothing else, it solidified my resolve to live out here in this type of environment. And it's cheaper. My rent for this house that I'm in, because I'm still renting, I haven't bought anything. My rent is like half of what I paid when I lived in Brooklyn. Half.
Yeah.
And I've got quadruple the space.
Yeah, because New York is like crazy for rent.
Oh, insane. Insane. I was paying close to $3,000 for a bedroom, a kitchen, a bathroom, and a they call it another bedroom, but it was pretty much a closet that I used to like record vocals in. But yeah, almost $3,000 a month. Are you kidding me? You're basically working to stay alive. And that's a lot of the people in the city, that's what they do. If you look at the rents they pay, what they pay for parking, because if you can't get street parking, you have to pay for monthly parking down there. Mm. That's like $300 a month just to park your fucking car. At this point, it's like, what's the point, man? You know, I can be in the city.
It's all part of the rat race, isn't it? That's what it becomes. It's just sort of, you are literally just a number, just funding other people's lifestyles, really. Yeah. Because the people who are renting these apartments, they don't live in the cities.
No.
They probably live in the mountains, or they own a ranch somewhere, or they live in the countryside, and they live just happy, relaxed lives, I imagine. It's like, but you're just funding that for other people. It's insane. The whole sort of, the rent, and especially in London, and more so now in Manchester, I imagine, Andy, it gets insane.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. It's crazy everywhere at the minute. I mean, I don't know how it is over like in the States, but like the UK at the minute, like there's a big housing crisis and like rent, and you know, it's just, even buying a house is becoming like really, really unaffordable for a lot of people. Like crazy. Like, you know, I was lucky enough to kind of buy my place at like a really good time when it was like really low. But you know, even the price on like my council house that I bought, you know, 12 years ago has just gone up ridiculously, which is great for me being on that ladder. But for people trying to get on that ladder, it's I would not like to be trying to do that in this kind of climate. And that's the thing as well, like you were saying there, Tomo, and what you were saying before, Jesse, like that's why everyone's fucking yelling at each other and angry, and because they're literally just surviving like paycheck to paycheck, month to month, and working to live and not finding that joy, you know, probably working a second job on a weekend, or you know, like you say, going out and you know, drowning the problems in drink and things like that. Like, no wonder that, you know, they're fucking really angry the next, you know, the day when they're out.
It makes you it makes you worry about the next generation, doesn't it? Like your kids and things. It's like, it's just the whole world at the moment. It's just a bit mental, isn't it? Which is why I think, like, and I know lockdown has caused a lot of this, but like, lockdown, the whole COVID, the whole pandemic, obviously given the circumstances, was awful. But then also, on the other hand, it gave us all a chance to just sort of stop and just appreciate the small things in life and make you realise that you don't need this or you don't need that, when all you can do is you can just go walk down the beach, or you can walk down, you know, you can do a hike, or you can go on the river. It's just, I think that's what lockdown did for me mainly, was just make me appreciate the small things in life. Do you know
same,
what I mean?
Like, just discover stuff as well. Like, I remember, like, early on in the lockdown, so, like, again, like, where I lived, there's, like, little streams and things like that. And when we were kids, we'd play in them little streams and stuff and whatnot. And there was always this really smelly plant, and it's just really, And during lockdown, I found out it was wild garlic. So me and the kids were out picking wild garlic and like there just shit go. Like that. Like you'd never.
No vampires around there, baby.
No vampires in Withenshaw.
There is. No. I've been. There's loads.
There's a lot of blood sucking leeches.
I like that you brought that up, because that's something I'm careful to tread on that too, because some people are very sensitive, but there are portions of lockdown that were some of the most magical moments of my life, because we did simple things. Like you mentioned playing in a stream. I played in a stream. I remember there was one day where I went to the stream over here and all I did was make little rock dams and swim in it. And like, I was acting like a child for the entire day. And I had joy in my heart, because guess what? I didn't have to go on tour. I didn't have to worry about doing interviews. No one was telling me to write a record or checking on how's the record cut. There was none of that. All of that that I'd been so used to and being on tour, just go, go, go. All of it was gone. Don't get me wrong. There was a point where that was hard to deal with. But in the beginning, those first few months where I wanted a break. I remember saying to my lady in tears because we were just touring, 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 touring. It's like, I want to sit home long enough to watch the seasons change. Like, I miss watching the leaves change and fall. I never get to see that shit because I'm always on tour. And I got to see it, and it was beautiful, and it was amazing. But, you know, as time went on, you start to, oh, shit, how long is this going to last? And then, like, who are you without your career? Who are you? Who are you without someone going, you're that guy? That was powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for our industries as well, for the music, film and television, I think we suffered for a lot longer than other industries because, I mean, even now, I finished a film in January just gone and we're still having to do COVID tests, which is fine. I get that, you know, we need to work in a safe environment, but yeah. How long, I think it was nearly 2 years from lockdown being announced, or maybe a year and a half. It was certainly the longest that I've been without working since I was 12 years old.
Yeah,
and it's
same.
Like, for me, it got to that point and I was like, am I ever going to work again? And then you had the whole thing with our government saying maybe people should retrain and blah, blah, blah. And it got to the point and I was like, shit, should I go and do like joinery or bricklaying or learn something new? Because it just got to the point where it was like, just you didn't know whether we was ever going to be back doing what we do. And especially for your industry, Jesse, because having 30, 40,000 people or however many people in one room seemed like it was never, ever going to happen again.
Right. No, it was especially hard on musicians. And it's the first time that, you know, I had to go on unemployment and rely on the government to help me get by. And I also did Cameo, which, you know, I unashamedly did a ton of cameos, and my fans really helped pay the bills, as much as my band loves to poke fun and joke at me that I, you know, begged for money on the internet. But it helped a lot. Like, mm-hmm. It really did. And because of that, you know, our government, I'm going to go off on a tangent, but the IRS and our government over here is so corrupt. So I ended up owing so much money for doing all that stuff, for trying to survive. I actually just finished paying the government off this year from COVID because they took me to the cleaners for like making extra income. But that was tough. But, you know, I look back on it now and I feel like, and I maybe I'm just a hopeless optimistic, but I feel like I needed that in my life. I needed someone to pump the brakes on me and give me a reality check. And like you said, like, what would I do if I weren't a musician? What would you do if you weren't an actor? Like, what would you do? And I really had to think about that and come to terms with the fact that, yeah, I might have to get a different fucking job. And that was the first time in a decade or more that I even had that thought enter my brain.
Where would you go? What did you come to?
Park Ranger.
Nice.
Yeah. Which I still kind of want to do that when I grow up.
Never grow up, mate. It's a trap. It's a trap.
No, I agree. I'm still very much a child, you know. But yeah, I just love nature and I want to protect it. I mean, not sort of in a, you know, go out and, you know, protest and be Greenpeace, but I just think people need to live, like you said earlier, and I love this term, balance, be in harmony with nature. I don't think you've got to strip everything back and stop all production and destroy all the machines. There's a way to live in harmony with it. And I think as I get older, especially living out where I live, I appreciate nature so much. But I also drive a truck and I love my truck and I love driving. So, you know what I mean? I'm not full on like green all the way. I think we need to live in balance. And I think if I were a park ranger, you're educating people about fragile species. You're educating people about wildlife that they may be afraid of, you know? Like, for example, we live near a town called Bearsville. No joke.
Okay.
And in our front yard during the season, bears walk through our front yard.
Wow.
And my lady, who's born and raised in Staten Island, you know, New Yorker to the core, is so scared. And I'm like, no, like black bears, for the most part, that if they see you, they're going to run the other direction. Like, they don't want to deal with you. Like, you shouldn't be afraid. You should respect them.
Yeah.
But don't be afraid of them, you know? And I think that's important for people to learn nature. Like, to me, that's a passion. I'm such a nature boy. I absolutely love nature. I'm inspired by it. I write about it. It's kind of become part of my spiritual belief as well. Like, nature's everything. So yeah, park ranger would suit me best. Imagine like people walking through a trail and they meet me and I'm the one educating you about, like, I would love that. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the dream, man.
How about you guys? What would you do?
I don't know. What would you do, Andy?
if I could do anything, probably. I've always wanted like a farm. I think I've said this on the podcast before. Like, I'm quite like that. Like, I've always loved animals. I was a vegetarian when I first found out what meat was when I was a kid. When someone kind of explained what it was, I went vegetarian for about a year or so. But the smell of bacon just brought me back.
I get it.
But yeah, I think something like that. Like, I'd like to have a farm. Like, probably not like a meat producing farm. I used to keep chickens. Like things like that. Just like you say, just kind of living. You know, it's harder to do here, I guess, in a sense. But kind of living off the land in that sense, and you know, just having that kind of life. I think. What about you, T? You could be a car thief, right?
Yeah, no, I've already been that. I've done that. My dad always said to me that I'm a blagger. I could blag my way through any situation. So I don't, like, maybe a car salesman or something. I don't know. I could sell milk to a cow. So yeah, I think probably a car salesman. Yeah. That or a car thief. It involved cars.
Yeah, you're that kind of guy. You would make money somehow. You know.
Well,
you
could steal. Yeah, I would make.
Yeah, you could steal a car and sell it. No, you could steal a car and fucking sell it.
Yeah, I could just life GTA. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I would find ways. But I also I had a few years off from being an actor, both through my own fault, through choices, and just sort of not paying enough attention when I should have been. But I went and worked in a bar in my local pub and honestly loved it. I was just like in my element. I was getting paid to go and watch the football and be with friends and meet locals and hear new stories and find out the gossip of the town. And yeah, I loved working behind a bar. So yeah, I could happily do that.
I like bar work. I like working in a pub. Yeah.
I love being in pubs. I always have done since I was a little boy. Like my mum spent a lot of time in the pubs, and obviously when I turned 18, I spent a lot of time in the pubs with my friends. And yeah, I think being in the pub is my happy place. But I go to the pub a lot nowadays with my friends and don't drink. I can spend the whole day there with them, just drinking Diet Coke, and I don't mind that. I like being in that sort of atmosphere.
Yeah, I can relate, man. My lady's a bartender. But she works at like a nice cocktail, like a nice upscale.
Oh, the place I was working was not nice. Quite the opposite. Yeah.
But, you know, I do like going there, but you're right. I mean, especially there's something different over in the UK and in England with pub life, pub mentality. There's something so comforting about that. That is one of my favorite things to do when we go over there, too. And, you know, I haven't been there. Shit, I haven't been there since before the pandemic. So with my new lifestyle of drinking less, it's funny. I never, ever used to be this guy, but I kind of don't mind mocktails and non-alcoholic fake drinks.
Your fan base has just run a mile.
No, I don't care. I don't care. Because I still drink, but to pace myself, instead of having drink after drink after drink, I might have an actual cocktail then have a mocktail. Just to like space it out and help sort of like not go nuts. But
I think that is an age thing. Me and my friends, when we did, we've done all day sessions in the pub, and genuinely we've had a jug of water in the middle. And these are all like, we're all sort of alpha males. We like to have a laugh and a joke, but there will be a jug of water in the middle of the table sometimes because we like to just sort of get it in us and
you got to
prepare for the next day. Yeah.
No, I think that's just smart. That's just intelligent. I don't think that's, water is key. I mean, I drink about a gallon a day being a vocalist, and look at my skin. I'm going to be 45. Like, I'm good.
I mean, you look good.
It's because I drink a shitload of water. Like, honestly, most people are dehydrated. They walk around, they don't realize they're dehydrated. They got skin issues, they got digestive issues, they got all this shit. It's because you're not fucking drinking enough water. That's it, period. I was living in Philly.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Philadelphia. Where I got to, you know, we were like the only white family in the whole neighborhood. I grew up around black folks. Like, that was my culture when I was a little kid. And it was in a particularly violent part of town called Germantown, ironically. There were no Germans there. Germantown, Pennsylvania, in the 1980s, there was a radical movement that was very pro-black. And being the only white kids in the neighborhood, we weren't liked by everybody. So we had protection because my dad was a man of God. So the lady next door to us, whose name was Mary, biblical name, she had a son named Moses. And Moses was a pimp. And Moses used to carry around a sawed-off shotgun in his trench coat, and he'd escort the pastor's family around. So when I was younger, I had Uncle Moses, which I had no idea. The dude was packing heat, and he was a pimp. Used to escort us around to the train station to get to work, to get to school. So I've been in like crazy environments where, you know, gunshots are going off and you couldn't get more urban and inner city and dangerous. And then living out in the middle of nowhere on 300 acres on a farm in the middle of America. So I've seen it all. I've moved around a lot. And I think that because of that, it lended itself to me to sort of like going to the lifestyle of touring and being on a bus and traveling. It made it sort of easy because that was kind of my life. My whole childhood, we were moving constantly. You know, I'd make friends in school and 2 years later, we're moving, make new friends. So I always had to like, how do I make friends? It reminds me of This Is England. How do I be that kid that's picked on and is like, you know, wears stupid clothes because they used to always make fun of my clothes. I came from the farm, moved back into a city, and kids are like, what's up with your pants? What's up? Like you, what's your hair? Like you got a mullet. What are you doing? Like, so that I had to like learn how to charm people. I had to learn how to be funny. I had to learn how to like be cool. And traveling was part of that. So it's all kind of led me to being a traveling musician. And it's fascinating to look back on that. But, you know, my fondest memories of my childhood were when I was out in nature, when we were out in the woods or when I lived on that farm, spending days by myself in the cornfields, walking, like being by myself, learning how to be my own friend. It sounds sad, but it's true. Our closest neighbors were miles away and I had nowhere to get there. I didn't have a car. You know, my bike, you couldn't ride on the roads there. There were huge, long stretches of highway with trucks going by. So I learned a lot about myself in nature. And I think that's why I ended up where I am now in my 40s, living out in nature.
Do you find that as you get older that you, do you still enjoy traveling as much as you did when you was younger? Or now are you sort of like you miss home a lot more?
It's balance. It's balance. If I'm home too long, I'm itching to get out. I'm so ready to travel. the one downside of it that I actually really hate is airports. I can't fucking stand airports.
Yeah. why so? How come?
Everything about airports, the overbearing security that I think is, especially here in the States, you have to take your shoes off and you have to, like, you know, go through those big machines, which I usually opt out. Like, I hate going through those big fucking radiation machines all the time. The waiting, the cancellations, the delays, like, I don't know how bad it is there because I haven't been over there in like 4 or 5 years, but here in the States, since the pandemic, I've experienced more delays and cancellations than I've ever had in my entire life. And it just drives me fucking crazy because these people, these companies who make so much money, like, it doesn't make sense. You guys have the money. Stop messing with us. It just drives me nuts. So I love to travel, but I fucking hate airports. Hate them.
Yeah. They're just it's just like, I mean, you get why them rules are in place and things, but, like, yeah, it's that kind of, once you're in an airport, you are just like a cog in a machine. You're literally going along a conveyor belt, security, this, that, the other, da-da-da-da-da.
And so you're like lemmings, huh? You can remember that game, Lemmings.
Go ahead.
Go on. Sorry, Jesse.
No worries. In the moment I get past security, like, I'm okay. I'm cool. I get into a sort of a meditative mode. I have to, like, when I know I'm going to the airport, I'll go 3 hours early. I will go so early that I'm not going to stress. And I see people running to their gates. I'm like, I'm not going to fucking be that guy.
Yeah.
And then once you get past security, I just look, because listen, I'm not much of a drinker, but almost every time I fly, it's tradition.
It's an airport pint. You have to have an airport pint.
I get a Bloody Mary with gin. Like, I'm a gin Bloody Mary guy. Like, that's the first thing. I go to the first pub and hopefully it's near my gate so I can just hang out there and maybe one or two, or a martini.
even if it's, we flew to Portugal recently and we was at the airport at 3 a.m. and we got through security. Dude. We got through check-in like, I don't know, 3:30 a.m. And we all just kind of stood and we was like, pint? Like, yeah. You just, I don't know what it is. It's just,
it's fun.
And it was so, it was so strange to look around because we flew from Birmingham and there's a Wetherspoons there. And it was, I stopped and I said to the lads that I was with, I said, this is wild because it's 4 a.m. and everyone is pinting. You've got people dressed as Mario Brothers. You've got people dressed as jockeys, all on stag doos and hen do. And everyone's just stood around sober with a pint in her hand at 3:30 a.m. Yeah. Just, if you could pick this up and put it in any other situation other than an airport, imagine that at a train station imagine that at the bus station. It just wouldn't be acceptable. But at an airport, it's like everyone's just, I guess it's people are in holiday mode, aren't they?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Even if I'm working, even if I'm going away flying for work, I still have that airport pint. So
yeah, I think for me, like, because it's different. Again, this is probably that kind of difference between, you know, the countries. But because the UK being so small, most of our traveling with our work is trains or, you know, driving and stuff like that. So
speak for yourself, mate. I'm international.
I've done a couple of jobs overseas, but for me,
Ireland does not count.
You know, I've worked in Budapest. That's probably the famous stuff. But, like, for me, like, airports still have that magic because I remember, like, being a kid, waking up early and going to the airport, you know, and being excited. And I still get that, even if I am just flying to, you know, over to Ireland to do some work or, you know, over to, you know, wherever it is to do work. It still kind of feels like vacation mode. It still feels like that kind of, oh, you know, and I think, yeah, that's a big part of it. But I found as well, like, the older I've got, and again, this is probably with having kids and stuff. If I'm traveling with my wife and my kids, like, I become that airport dad.
Are you, like, an airport panicker?
Oh, mate, yeah. Like, I remember watching my dad.
Them people.
I remember watching my dad as a kid standing up every 10 minutes to check the gate number, to check everything, you know, panicking. Have you got the passports? Have you got this? Have you got that? And, like, it's one of them things where you go, I'm never going to become my dad. I'm never going to become my dad. And I've fully embraced the airport dad to, you know.
Oh, my God.
When I'm on my own, couldn't care less. I'll have a nice pint, I'll sit, oh yeah, I'll get to the gate when I need to get to the gate and all that kind of stuff. But there's just something about when you kind of, maybe it's some kind of macho bullshit, but like when you're traveling with like other people, you're kind of like, right, okay, I need to lead the pack here. You know, I need to be watching the gates and all that kind of rigmarole. But yeah,
Sorry, Jesse, go on.
No, you're good. No, I was going to say, if I had kids, I'd probably be the same way, I guess.
Yeah. See, even then I'm not, I just kind of, but I think I had a terrible experience in Russia. We basically, it's a long story, but we got trapped in Russia and we were stuck in Moscow for a while.
Tell him why though, Tomo.
No, I don't want to talk about it. Our visa's expired. And so there was a whole charade, but it was just like one problem after another. And in any port in any other airport in the world, it probably would have been fine. But because we was in Moscow, it was like, it was hands down the most terrifying experience of my life. So now whenever I go to any other airport in the world, I'm like, this is nothing. This is fine. Yeah. Because of what I've experienced, it's like I'm just more, I don't know. I think sometimes people in airports, they don't seem confident. They're always telling themselves that they're doing something wrong, or they're always like, they go inwards. Whereas me now at an airport, I'm just like, I'm confident. Yeah. I know what I'm doing. Nothing's going to match what I went through in Russia. So it's fine. Get me a pint.
No, I remember the first time me and my wife, we've been together a little while, and we went over to Florida to do like Disney World and all that, because we're them kind of people. And because obviously, like you say, the security in the States are a different kind of breed. And I am one of them people, though. Like, I remember standing in the queue in customs, and like, you've got your airport security there and the dogs and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, and I remember literally just panicking, like, really, like, I knew I didn't have any drugs on me or anything I shouldn't have on me.
But you then start in my to head, convince yourself that you have. Well, you're like, oh, my God, have I got some?
Yeah, well, in my head, because I was like 20, 21 at the time. And I was like, the wallet that is in my pocket definitely has had weed in it in the past 8 months. It's definitely had a little baggie of weed in there. What if the remnant smell of that gets me and then
triggers?
You know.
Well, Jesse, that even traveling with work, because like obviously when you're on tour, you spend a lot of time in different airports. Do they just become accustomed to it, or is it still that sort of exciting feeling when you are in an airport when you're on tour?
Yeah, it's hard when you're doing 30 flights in like 4 weeks. You know, yeah. Depending on where we are, and like you said, depending on the part of the world we're in, like we've done Russia, we've done Africa, we've done Southeast Asia. And those airports can be tedious depending on, you know, where you are and what's going on. The great thing about it is, though, for the most part, we've got a tour manager that's with us and he takes care of it. So
a babysitter.
Usually how it pans out is me and the boys in the band are like, where's the bar? Go do sort it out. Just tell us what we gotta do and we'll see at the bar. But you know, there have been times where, you know, we were rushed out of Russia because they going into conflict. We were in St. Petersburg doing a like a day off tourist thing, and like things were popping off. Like we had to get out of Russia quick, and that was a sort of a terrifying experience.
Was that recently with the what's going on at the moment?
No, that was the first time Russia invaded. Was it Belarus? This is like 2014. This is a while ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, if I'm by myself, like Andy said, I'm pretty like I got my shit together. If I've got to worry about other people, I'm a little more uptight. But if I'm with the band and the boys, you know, we're a well-oiled machine. You know, it doesn't really stress me out, but it can get tedious, dude, especially when you've got a show the next day. Like when you do places like Australia, you're flying every day. You're flying and then you have to land and then go play a show. Like it, that can get fucking super tiring, and it's hard not to get grumpy. Or we did Southeast Asia to Spain to Africa, like in the same tour, like insane flying. And you just get to the point where you just zone out. And I honestly, during that whole run, all of us were just drinking through it, because you're flying for 30 hours, like some days, like ridiculous shit. You just want that shit to go away. So I was just drinking red wine to get tired and just knocking the fuck out. But it's stress, but it's a different kind of stress because you have adventure. You know you're going to go do something fucking cool. So it kind of helps with the stress of the situation. But if I'm going on holiday and I've only got a certain amount of time, I tend to get a little stressed because I fucking earned that time to do nothing. And if I'm getting delayed in an airport, I tend to get snappy and grumpy and I have to watch myself for sure.
Yeah.
What is it about airport staff that, why are they all miserable? Why do they hate?
See, this is...
Why do they hate everybody? It's kind of like my take on it would be, if I worked in a world where every day I had to get out of bed at 6 a.m., to go and check in some really happy people who were going on the holidays and they're about to have the time of their lives. And then I've just got to sit and babysit those people through an airport. I think that's probably why they are quite miserable. But yeah, I don't know what it is about. Maybe that's only my experience, but I think a lot of them are just quite miserable. Right.
Yeah, because obviously, like, again, like where I live like right close to an airport. So a lot of my family, a lot of like my friends from school and stuff like that's one of the main employers. So a lot of when I go to fly from Manchester Airport, guaranteed it'll be a friend that I know, or it'll be someone that I went to school with who's security or who's doing whatever. And yeah, they are grumpy. I think it is that, mate. I think like
and they're miserable out of work as well, or just
no. That's the mad
Jordan.
Thing.
Jordan works at the airport, doesn't he?
Yeah,
but he
yeah,
doesn't have to deal with the people that go to. He doesn't have to deal with the people firsthand that are going on holiday. He does the baggage stuff.
Yeah, that's but true. I think it is that lifestyle, like you say, because it's up at like probably like more like 4 a.m. to start at like 5, and then a lot of them do like long sort of.
But
like
then the
12
people
hour
that work
shifts.
At Disneyland aren't miserable. They're all happy, and everyone's people who are there are having the best time of their lives, and they're really happy. Maybe out of work, they're just the saddest people ever. They just hate their lives.
Yeah, you've got to figure out.
Well, you got to figure too with people at airports, right? Like you're dealing with the masses, and there's not, without sounding mean here, not a lot of smart people. So you got people who are doing the same mistakes over and over again, and you have to make sure you take all your metal out of your pockets. You have all your metal out of your pockets. They go through the thing. Boop. You don't have all your metal. That after having to say that 100 times over, I would probably get pissed too. Like, come on. Like, how many times have you guys been to the airport? Just fucking do it and get through. I would probably lose it too. I wouldn't want that job.
I was at a train station the other day and the same sort of thing. So like I don't know what they're called, the guys who kind of stand on the platforms. His job is to scream, stand back from the yellow line, stand back. Cause the trains are coming through like quick. And yeah, like nobody wants to stand in front of that yellow line, but every idiot stands in front of that yellow line. And this guy is literally shouting like, you will get hit by a train and die. Like, do you know what I mean? And then I asked him a question because I think the platform changed and he sort of said it, but I had my headphones on and I was like, oh, is that the train back to Manchester? And he went, yes. And I was like, whoa, okay. Yeah. But then as soon as I walked off in my head, I'm going, that prick. But then I kind of walked off and I was like, no, you know what? He's just been screaming like you say, everything in them situations, I think everybody does become a bit of an idiot. Like the whole, I think it's been stopped over here now, but like the whole water thing, like, you know, for like 10 years, everybody has known you can't take more than 10 mil, whatever it is, of liquids through.
Right.
And it's like, everybody knows that. That's a thing. But when you get to the end, there's still then people trying to take through like big jugs of water or, you know, things like that. And it's like, how have we not learned this yet? How have we not that should just be ingrained in everyone. But you still get them idiots trying to take through a big bottle of Pepsi or whatever. Like,
yeah, I think the big scope of it is, and it actually still runs in theme with the whole topic of city versus country lifestyle is people. If you're around a lot of people in constant contact with people, you have a certain type of attitude towards people. You know, like when you're in New York City, if you're too nice, it's annoying because it's fucking inconvenient. We got shit to do. Answer the question, move out of the way, keep going. We're up here. When I first moved up here, and listen, I've traveled a lot, I've dealt with a lot of people, but I've never had it on a regular basis where someone asks you how you're doing, you respond, and the conversation continues. They want to know more. And you're like standing there to in the checkout line at the grocery store or wherever in a full conversation. And people are genuinely like wanting to know how you are, what's going on. We're in a city. It's like, shut the fuck up. Yeah. I'm buying my shit. I'm going to pay for it. Get the fuck out. So when you're in an airport, especially a busy airport, and I'm going to tack on this too. So I used to live in the city. I would fly out of JFK or LaGuardia. Stress. Just fucking stress. The lines are as far as you can see. The staff are miserable. They're shouting at people. And now I live up here and I fly out of Albany Airport, which is a rinky-dink, teeny little airport. The staff are nice. There's one pub every time I go in there, super, like everyone's happy. People are buying each other drinks. You make a new friend. People at security, like I even had a guy recognize me and was like, he helped me get through security and just wanted an autograph. Like completely different vibe at the small airport versus the big airport. And that's because sheer amount of people, and you're dealing with, like I said earlier, the masses, the old term, the masses are asses. You know, like there's a lot of dumbass people. But when you distill it down to a small amount of people, if someone is going to issue a question, the staff's like, oh, I haven't heard that one in like an hour. Sure, no problem. Go that way. Not a big deal. Where in JFK, you ask a question, they're like, there's a sign right there. Keeps walking. Read the fucking sign.
Yeah, that is true, because that's one big kind of culture shock from sort of like in England with like the north south kind of divide. Like in London, if you get on the tube or the bus or any kind of public transport or anything and talk to someone, that you're a crazy person to them.
Yeah, like, what do you want? Whoa. What do you want from me?
yeah. Where like in the north, I mean, it's probably not as, doesn't happen as much in Manchester, but you know, if you got on the, we've got like trams, if you got on the tram and talk to someone, like it, that's okay, that's fine, people will tolerate that and chat and stuff like that. But I remember when I lived in London, like one of the big things for me moving back here, it's another city but it's culturally miles apart, was that same thing. Like you say, you know, I'd go in my local shop to buy the same thing every day or every couple of days, and I'd try to talk to the guy who worked there, try to kind of build a little bit of a friendship. And the, you know, it's that, it is that, isn't it? He's dealt with thousands of people that day, probably. Where here in my little town in Manchester, you know, I could be at the shop for like 3 hours, and my wife's like, "Where have you been?" I'm like, "Oh, I was talking to
I've been in the pub, shop, you know."
Yeah, probably. I was in the shop.
I must annoy people in London, especially when I'm drunk, because when I'm drunk, I'm very happy and very chatty. And then when I'm on the tube and I'm drunk and I'm just talking to random people, they're just like, who the fuck is this guy? Like, why is he telling me about his pet's names, or why do I know everything about him? But I'm that guy. But then I guess it's like, but I'm never going to change that, because in Grimsby, again, it's like, I think people often tell me, my agent mainly, that I could be too open sometimes. And I think that's just a thing with just Grimsby people, or people who are from sort of small towns or small villages. They are just kind of honest, open people, because there's just sort of there isn't that sort of rat race field, you know what I mean? Everyone kind of, like what you were just saying there, Jesse, people actually care about how your day's been, or, you know, what's going on in your life. I think that sort of divide is, it's intense when you get to London. I sometimes don't know what to do with myself, because I just feel like you can't talk to people. It's strange. Well,
I think it's good. I think, you know, and now that I've lived up here for going on 4 years now, you get that sense of community. And I think that gets lost. And I think it's important, because something as simple as going out to eat and having a drink at the pub and you start a conversation, the conversations are so vastly different between a busy, bustling city and a smaller town, where I feel like some of the conversations I've had here with people have changed my way of thinking, have helped me along the way, have made me feel like a better human being, or I've discovered new things or made a new friend or whatever. And you can't really get that in short amounts of time. You've got to sort of spend time with it. And when you're not in a rush, when you're not in the rat race, as you say, your brain changes. You become mm-hmm. a different person. I'm more at peace now than I've ever been in my entire life. Like, I'm happier. I see the world differently. I'm a better listener. I'm a better friend. You're more
present, I think. Aren't
yeah,
you?
There, that's a great word for it. Yes. Present.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I think that's the thing with, like, people in London and other busy cities around the world. They're just not very present with where they are because they've got other things on their mind. They've got an objective. They know where they need to be and they need to be there now. And I just think, like you're saying, and no one really cares about what other people are doing in London. It's just about what they're doing. Do you know what I mean? Especially when you're in, like, in the city centre, in like Soho or Oxford Circus or anywhere like that. It's just chaos. It unsettles me being in places like that. Just quickly, is there any cities in the UK that are your favourites, Jesse?
Manchester is a favorite of mine for sure. But I would say very close to that would be Birmingham. And Birmingham, for many reasons, but I think predominantly the culture and the subcultures that came from there. I mean, metal would be one, obviously. And then number two, the sort of ska, skinhead, reggae. You know, there's the Custard Factory, which I've been to a bunch, that whole area. I've gone to like mod dances there. And the subcultures are really alive. Well, at least they were last time I was there, alive and well, where you could go to a night and go skank to some reggae and like ska. And like, I love that shit. And people still have the scooters with the mirrors and like that shit is still alive in pockets of Birmingham. But Manchester was very welcoming to me. And I felt like the more we played there and the more time I spent there, that sort of replaced London. Because when you first go to England when you're young and you go to London, you're like, London's amazing. Like, to me, I could do without London. Like, I could be there for a day or two and like, I get it, but it doesn't have quite the same soul as places like Manchester and Birmingham do. But that's just my limited scope of England.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of like that, like with the States, like, cause I've been to New York and that never really appealed to me, New York. I'd like, I wanted to go and see the sights and kind of, again, growing up in England, like all our kind of media, all our films that we consume is all American, American, American. And I enjoyed it. Like, me and my wife on our honeymoon, we did like a little kind of tour of the States, few different states and places. I don't know. It was crazy. It was like London to me. It felt very Londonish. We did all the sites. We did Brooklyn Bridge. We went to, the Statue of Liberty and the World Trade Museum, all that kind of stuff. That was really, great to see and obviously sad to see with the World Trade and stuff. But LA felt more like to me, like, even though it's a crazy city and, it's downtown LA is quite similar to New York in that kind of sense where it is quite rat racy. Just the fact that it's kind of like more spaced out, it's more open. It just felt more, because I'm very much like that. Like Birmingham to me, I don't know. I've always said this to you, Antetomo, because you go
love
Birmingham.
My brother lives there. Yeah, I love Birmingham.
I just find it very, same with Leeds as well. It's quite claustrophobic. It feels very built up and not really spaced out.
Very tall.
Yeah, yeah. Manchester's got that a little bit kind of, more kind of spaced out kind of vibe to it, I think. It's not as imposing. I hate feeling like small and claustrophobic in a city where,
But I get that, but I think that's what shapes a city, right? I mean, that's why I would say Manchester and Birmingham are very vastly different. But there's a fucking soul to Birmingham that I can't put my finger on. And I think that's probably why some of my favorite music has come out of Birmingham. There's something there to it. Like metal bands coming out. Like, it makes sense that a metal band would come out of Birmingham and be, or a punk band like GBH, which I fucking love GBH. Because there's just a something to it. There's a badassness to that town. It's just like a hardworking, working class, don't fuck with us kind of town. That's probably why I like it there.
Have you seen it was on the news this morning actually saying that they're doing a a Black Sabbath ballet.
What? No.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a ballet kind of show, but all to the music of Black Sabbath, which
interesting.
Yeah, that'll be. I love that shit.
Yeah, flip it on its head. It can be anything. I love that kind of shit too. Fuck it, I'd go to check that out.
Yeah, yeah, I might go and do that. I think that'll obviously be in Birmingham, or at least start there and then probably tour, I guess.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
All right, boys.
Yeah, nice one, man. That's thank you very much for joining us, Jesse. It's
well, I'm gonna be honest with you guys. It's a fucking honor. Big fan of both you guys, and not just with This Is England, but you know, stuff that you've done. I respect you guys as artists, and it was really cool for me to just, you know, be able to do this, even though it's virtual. But yeah, definitely honored you guys asked me to. It's been an absolute pleasure to hang out with you guys and just chat and shoot the shit.
Bless you. Thanks, mate. Thanks, appreciate man. That. You should give us a shout if you're on tour in Manchester, and we'll try and catch a beer.
Oh,
or
no,
we'll go
absolutely.
Hiking. We'll go
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Man. We'll figure it out, but I'll definitely be in touch with you guys. And I'm going to get over there, if not with the band. Matt and I are going to try to do some podcasting of some sort. Either he's going to come here, or I'm going to go there, or both. But when that happens, either way, whether it's with the band or with Matt, we definitely need to link up and have a few pints and some laughs.
100%, yeah, wicked. 100%. Yeah, buzzing. Thanks again, mate. Appreciate it.
Thank you guys, brother, and take care of yourselves and take care of your families.
Take care, mate.
You too, man.
You too. Thank you.
Peace.
Another episode down.
Done and dusted.
Another lovely chat.
Another week out of the way.
Hope you're all having a fantastic week. Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, another lovely chat. And just nice to be doing the podcast, doing what we love doing, man.
Yeah, it's nice to be together, and it's nice to have it all sort of done professionally and comfortably. And yeah, and I think it's really showing with the guests that we're getting on at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, the more that we can keep doing this, the more that we can provide for you listeners at home, the viewers that are watching on YouTube. There is a way that you can support us, if Andy would like to tell.
I will. You can support us in many ways. One of the main ways being we do have a Patreon account. If you can go on there, it's www.patreon.com/overrateeverything. That just helps us to secure guests. You know, we want to be getting bigger and better guests from London and places like that down to the studio. Obviously, that costs money. And for a small fee each month, you guys can contribute towards that. And you'll get rewarded as well. What kind of rewards will you get, Thomas Turgus?
Well, it depends how much they're willing to spend. No, we've got so much in store, haven't we? We've got like... We've got the lives coming up.
We've got lives,
I know,
which is
promised over the
exciting.
Years. Yeah, man. Yeah, I can't wait for all that. We've just got sort of behind the scenes exclusive footage that we're doing, and
got some bonus podcasts as well.
Some bonus podcasts with ourselves and with some guests.
Some of the guests.
Yeah, just sort of. But I guess as the more it goes on, we'll just the more surprises that we'll drop.
We want to have fun with it. We're creative people. We want to have fun. We want to be creative. We want to make some nice content for you guys.
Yes.
And keep that Patreon going over. But obviously, we ain't no fools. We know times can be hard for everyone. Mm. And so if you can't subscribe to Patreon, that's fine. That's cool. Yeah. What you can do, if you love the podcast, is like, subscribe, share, tell a mate as well.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's used to just going share, share, share. Like, actually sit in the pub or wherever you're meeting with your mates and socialising in the gym. Yeah. And just go, hey, have you heard that podcast? It's pretty good, you know. Yeah, get it on Spotify. Bam.
Play it really loudly when you're at a red light with the windows open.
Play it really loudly at red lights. Overrate Everything, the best podcast to play really loudly at red lights.
There you go.
If that's illegal, we're going to get sued.